Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Our number is 877-726-8255. Keep those questions coming regarding Intelligent Medicine. We're going to take some in just a moment. But first, if you get a bone density scan, as most women are getting, you're going to get a score that predicts your likelihood of developing a devastating hip or spinal fracture. But did you realize that most older adults who sustain a fracture have T-scores greater than minus 2.5, and hence they don't meet the clinical criteria for osteoporosis? So we need to do a better job of identifying who's at risk. And in a moment, I'm going to share with you a new revolutionary technique that's going to completely change the landscape when it comes to fracture prediction. But first, let's take a call from Mary in New York City. How you doing, Mary?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Dr. Hoffman. I'm so grateful that you took my call. I've been listening to you for years.
Great.
Hello?
Great. Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, hi. My question is about adrenal fatigue. My husband, Dan, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma about a year ago. That's under control now. And recently, he has been diagnosed with adrenal fatigue. Do you think that low testosterone...
Just the question is, on what basis was he diagnosed with adrenal fatigue?
A cortisol saliva test.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's a test that... integrative doctors do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problem with that test is that some of the labs are unreliable, in my opinion.
Okay.
I once started working with a lab that told me that virtually everyone that I was submitting samples for had adrenal fatigue.
Oh.
And that was weird because under previous management, the same lab told me the opposite, that everybody was under adrenal stress and their cortisol was too high. But somehow, when they changed management... maybe they got a new lab director or something. All of a sudden, the results were backwards. And so I started using other labs, and I discovered that, no, it wasn't the case. So that test is useful, and it's not surprising that someone with a disease like multiple myeloma is going to be depleted. You know, they're going to be tired, and they may be tired due to lack of cortisol, or they may be tired simply due to the anemia that's associated with that disease, or that is a condition that's often associated with general debilitation and fatigue. So bearing that in mind, let's assume that the results are correct, that he does have low cortisol or adrenal fatigue. Go ahead.
Yes. I just wanted to know what types of supplements should he take, and if low testosterone may have anything to do
with
it?
And low testosterone can really be a factor, and I really like to put our men with myelodysplastic syndrome, which sometimes a precursor, and multiple myeloma, I like to put them on testosterone if it's safe. And that would mean checking the prostate, making sure that the prostate isn't going to start to show progressive elevations in PSA, which is indicative of prostate cancer. We don't want that complicating one problem with another. But testosterone can be beneficial for a couple of reasons. First of all, it generally helps energy and mood. But also it helps blood counts, and patients with multiple myeloma tend to have deficiencies in their blood counts. They tend to be anemic. So that could help. Could it help the adrenal fatigue? Well, not directly, but other things like DHEA, which is a thing that the adrenals make, can help with supporting that. In terms of supplements that help the adrenals, ashwagandha, ginseng, the rosuvin, or from rhodiola plant, these are things that can help to support adrenal function. The nutrient par excellence for multiple myeloma is vitamin D. Many patients with multiple myeloma are deficient in vitamin D, and vitamin D seems to help slow the progression of that condition. I might also add high doses of curcumin. I have a patient coming in who has multiple myeloma in my practice, and in anticipation of that patient, I did a little research on multiple myeloma, and I found that There's some studies that suggest that antioxidants may be beneficial, especially glutathione or things that support glutathione, like N-acetylcysteine. So those are among the things that I would do. And, you know, testosterone would be in order if you can find a physician who's amenable to prescribing testosterone. That might help the, you know, his overall vitality. And keep in mind, this multiple myeloma these days is often not a fatal disease. It's a debilitating condition. It's a cancer that you can live with, like a chronic disease. It can be monitored at first. It can be treated, and new treatments are coming online every couple of years. And so it's sort of a slow, slowly developing malignancy, and often, you know, is not the proximate cause of a person dying. You know, it's just maybe a debilitating condition that has to be coped with.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. All the best. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. All right. On that story that I shared with you earlier, it turns out that most older adults who end up getting a fracture, either of the hip or of the spine, actually have T-scores greater than minus 2.5. So if they had a routine DEXA scan, which is what's recommended for women over 50 every couple of years, and for men, unfortunately, often men don't get this, but men should get them every couple of years after the age of 70, they wouldn't actually meet the clinical criteria for osteoporosis, and they might not get adequate attention. The DEXA might miss their risk. And why is that? Because, well, the DEXA just measures bone thickness. And bone density or thickness does not necessarily equate with bone strength due to something called bone microarchitecture. Now, if you're familiar with basic engineering concepts or architectural concepts, you know that some buildings that look very sort of diaphanous, structures like bridges, they sometimes look like they're made out of thin air, but their architecture is such that they handle the enormous stresses of the weight of carrying passenger trains and cars and freight with great ability to withstand stresses. And same thing with bones. The density of bones does not necessarily equate with the resilience of the bones, the ability of bones to withstand fractures. And in fact, part of the microarchitecture is the slight bit of flexibility or give that keeps bones from being brittle. So what the DEXA is not taking into account is the microarchitecture that actually determines fracture risk to a far greater extent than density. So what they're experimenting with is a new technique, and this is a mouthful. It's high-resolution peripheral quantitative CT, which is abbreviated HRP-QCT. Now, even if you can write very fast and you write this down, you go to your doctor and you say, I want one of those. You can't get it yet because these devices are brand new and they're under study. But believe you me, within 5 or 10 years, they'll be in common use, virtually completely supplanting the use of bone density as a way of screening for osteoporosis risk. I can virtually guarantee it. The CT-HRP-QCT is going to be a much more valuable tool. According to a study, what they found is that the HRP-QCT improved prediction of fracture well beyond femoral neck bone density, and even when you do what's called a FRAC score, which takes into account certain risk factors, you know, age and various other risk factors that you can sometimes put into an algorithm. So the findings show that this test improves prediction and might improve identification of people at the highest risk of fracture and therefore who deserve attention, even if their bone densities appear to be relative to the introduction of that technology. We'll keep our eye on it. And pretty soon, this will be commercialized, coming to a radiology center, or a doctor's office near you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 877-726-8255 is our number for Intelligent Medicine.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links from my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. As always, I strive to provide you with the tools you need to make informed choices beyond the cookie-cutter care of today's healthcare system, and these new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the Intelligent Medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, listen up. It's me, your immune system. I'm always hard at work defending you against the many disease-causing viruses and bacteria that you are exposed to every day. But sometimes I need help to defeat the bad bugs. Luckily, our friends at Kyolic have come to the rescue. Kyolic has two super immune-enhancing supplements, Kyolic Immune Formula 103 and Kyo Green Harvest Blend Immune Defense. Kyo Green Harvest Blend is a power-packed blend of organic and naturally sourced grasses, ancient grains, fruits, veggies, herbal extracts, and spirulina in a fast-dissolving drink mix for a quick and easy way to support immunity. Kyolic Immune Formula 103 combines immune-boosting nutrients with aged garlic extract. Aged garlic extract has been clinically shown to support a healthy immune response and reduce both the duration and severity of cold and flu symptoms. Help me protect you with Kyolic supplements and nutritional drink mixes to fortify your immune health today. Available at fine natural health retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. 877-726-8255 is our number for questions during this hour, during the program. But you can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll use those questions as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, where we answer email questions. And you can also record a question by going to our website, drhoffman.com. On the homepage, you're going to find a little box on the right side of the page on your PC or Mac. And if you click on the box, you can record a question, as did Carol. Let's hear from Carol.
Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I would like your opinion on Myocalcin Calcitonin Salmon Oil Nasal Spray for bone density. I took it for years, had no side effects. After it was prescribed for my mother, and I believe it prevented any fractures in her. My doctor refuses to prescribe it any longer. The FDA now says it can cause malignancy. Plus, they say it is not effective, in their opinion. I don't put much stock in that. I have not been diagnosed with osteoporosis, but I believe so-called osteopenia in one hip. Thank you very kindly.
Okay, well, number one, if you have osteopenia, in my opinion, you don't really need to take any medication whatsoever. And, you know, especially with the now black box warning that there's a chance of malignancy. Although I haven't seen that with myocalcin. Myocalcin is a salmon-derived hormone that delivers calcitonin to the bone, and it helps slow the deterioration of bone. Now, it's one of the oldest medications around for osteoporosis, and hence it's been supplanted by some of the newer, more powerful medications, and it's fallen out of favor. Also, because it's nasal medication, it can irritate the sinuses, and it can cause headaches. But I didn't know. I just did a little search on it. I didn't see any black box warning about cancer risk. I think that may be the case with something called Forteo, which is an injectable form. But the nasal form I haven't seen associated with cancer at all. And the black box warning applies to continuous use for more than 2 years. That's why the injectable form is only used for 2 years and not for longer. And it hasn't caused cancer in humans, but in animal studies it did at higher doses for more prolonged periods. So they suggest, you know, just use it for a couple of years and then stop. You can use it, but, you know, if you just have osteopenia, first of all, you know, there's now some concerns about the predictive value of the DEXAs, as I just mentioned. The DEXA speaks to bone density, doesn't speak to bone strength, bone architecture, bone suppleness, bone flexibility, bone resilience. And we need better tests to predict that. And those tests are around the corner, not yet in routine use, but pretty soon I think they'll be rolled out for general use. I suspect they'll be used in 5-10 years, almost to the exclusion of bone densitometry. That'll become old hat. When it comes to enhancing bone, my favorite supplement is strontium, but I'm not sure even if I would deploy strontium in your case if you just have osteopenia, which osteopenia is not a disease. It's just a sort of a pre-disease, and it's a normal physiologic state for women after menopause. They're going to have a little less robust bone density than a woman who's 35. So does it even need to be treated that aggressively? You know, perhaps just by doing exercise, weight-bearing, taking adequate vitamin D, taking such supplements as Osteothera from Claire Labs that has a bunch of bone-supportive nutrients. Ostera, sounds a little like Osteothera, but Ostera is a hops-derived product from Metagenics that also reduces inflammation in bone, which is actually a component of bone deterioration. High levels of inflammation promote bone loss, as we see in rheumatoid arthritis patients. Their joints are very inflamed, so too are their bones, and they often get fragile bones. Vitamin K, MK7 vitamin K, is also protective against fractures. So I don't think I would even, I mean, if you want, you can use it. It's a mild osteoporosis medication, and the side effects of the nasal spray are minimal, and you're not experiencing them. And they work for your mom, so I wouldn't necessarily be discouraged. I think doctors tend to poo-poo medications that have been around for a long time that have a weak effect, and they want to grab for medications that are going to give a bigger bang. And maybe also because those medications are still on patent and are more profitable for drug companies. We know that when big pharma representatives, salespeople come to doctors' offices to promote drugs and drop off samples, they're more likely to prescribe those newer, more expensive drugs. That's sort of the way of medical economics. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 877-726-8255 is our number. We await more of your phone calls. We've got lots more to talk about on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And we invite you to call us, 877-726-8255. There's still time to get through to us. Our call queue is short, 877-726-TALK. And if you can't call us this hour, you got a burning question, you can email your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll be happy to answer your question at length during our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, or go to our website at drhoffman.com and record a question. And this item just kind of supports the idea that we ought to be consuming a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, just like mom said, because intake in middle and late adulthood is tied to less memory loss in men. A long-term diet rich in vegetables, fruit, and orange juice. Orange juice I'm not such a big fan of, but I guess if you're on a generally poor diet, it's kind of a shorthand for getting some critical vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients, but it is laden with sugar, so beware of orange juice. I prefer, you know, fresh fruit. And for some people, they need to limit their fresh fruit because of the sugary impact of fresh fruit. But a long-term diet rich in vegetables, fruit, and orange juice was tied to lower risk of memory loss in men. And there's a big study out of Harvard. Leafy greens, dark orange and red vegetables, and berry fruits showed the strongest links when analyzed separately. A vegetable and fruit-rich diet 18 to 22 years earlier was linked with lower odds of poor cognitive function. And that was regardless of more recent eating patterns. So those of y'all out there who are in middle age, you're really setting the stage for, you may not be thinking about it now because you're in the fast lane, but your exercise pattern and your eating pattern really will set the stage for your subsequent risk of cognitive decline. And so make sure you consume lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. At the time of cognitive assessment, men were on average 73 years old, and only 55% had good subjective cognitive function. 38% had moderate function. That's too bad. 38% already had moderate function, suggesting some cognitive decline. 7.3% had poor function. And then they look back. After controlling for major non-dietary factors and total energy intake, so that would be like smoking and exercise and just, you know, eating too much, higher consumption of total vegetables, total fruits, and fruit juice each were significantly associated with lower odds of moderate or poor subjective cognitive functioning. Pretty good. Pretty good. So these studies really substantiate the importance of eating a healthy diet when it comes to the brain. Future research, they say, will be needed to understand which dietary components in particular are beneficial to brain health. Then we can isolate them, put them into supplements, or eventually pharmaceutical companies will turn them into medications. But meantime, there's just something about fresh fruits and vegetables that protects the brain, and that's not surprising. Vitamin D may help you get discharged home sooner if you should have the misfortune of being hospitalized, because a new study suggests that a deficiency in vitamin D triples the length of time patients stay in hospital. Now, vitamin D deficiency is not usually an isolated phenomenon. It can just be a sign of poor shape. It could also be associated with obesity, because we know that many patients who are obese are vitamin D deficient. And patients with metabolic disorders, they seem to have low levels of vitamin D. So maybe this is correlation and not necessarily causation. But there's got to be an element of truth to this, is that vitamin D helps to support healing, helps to support the immune system. When it comes to fractures, facilitates fracture healing. So they say here, when they're commenting on this, one theory is that as vitamin D is involved in muscle function, when it is absent or its effects are blocked, it can result in muscle wasting, reducing mobility, and potentially increasing hospital stay. Because, you know, if you're sick and you can't get back up on your feet, they're going to keep you in the hospital. It's also linked to the immune system. It could affect the body's response to infection, and infections are often a complication of hospital stays. So, the question is, should we be giving every hospitalized patient a booster dose of vitamin D? I personally think so. And what harm could it do? And we could thereby help get patients home sooner and reduce hospital costs. This item's about fitness trackers. And just a little anecdote from a spin class that I went to. I managed to get up early on Wednesday. Actually, it was Friday. And went to the 7 a.m. spin class at the Y. And that's where the real stalwarts show up, because it's cold, it's gloomy, and it's Friday. Not a lot of people show up for the 7 a.m. spin class. But we finished the spin class, and we're all sweaty, and we're kind of joking, because there's a little monitor, electronic monitor on the spin bikes that shows how many calories you expended. So the guy behind me, he's kind of a jokester, he goes, "Oh, boy, I burned up 425 calories. I can go out and have donuts now." And, everybody laughed. But this kind of underscores the problem with fitness trackers. A lot of people wear them now. They show how many steps you've taken. They show how many calories you've burned. Virtually every device in a gym tells you how far you've gone, how many calories you've burned, and so on. These devices may actually be a disincentive for weight loss. Here's the story. Fitness trackers flop for long-term weight loss. Patients not using devices lost more weight after 2 years. So they did a study. It's called the IDEA study, Innovative Approaches to Diet, Exercise, and Activity. And they were very hopeful that by fitting people with fitness trackers, they would, at the end of the study, lose more weight. Because, you know, the assumption is, yeah, fitness trackers make you exercise more and, you know, burn more calories, and you lose weight. And so we should, you know, make that part of our medical care system. Make sure everybody has fitness trackers, everybody exercising, working out, burning calories. Some studies have found that fitness trackers could boost short-term weight loss, prompting the current study to evaluate the durability of such benefits. And ultimately, they had to conclude that devices that monitor and provide feedback on physical activity may not offer an advantage over standard behavioral weight loss approaches. And I suspect it's because of that very phenomenon that I observed in my spin class, which is something that psychologists refer to as moral licensing, which is that you were virtuous, you exercised, you did whatever, you ran, you cycled, you walked, and therefore you've earned that treat. And if your workout says that you burn 400 calories, you just go precisely to the table and you consume a delicious food or dessert that's 400 calories. A piece of strawberry cheesecake, perhaps, or some Häagen-Dazs ice cream. But it doesn't work that way because what you end up doing is you end up subverting the weight loss benefits of the exercise. And maybe, just maybe, if you don't have a device that tells you how many calories you burned, you're not going to feel so entitled to that sugary, carb-laden treat. That's just one theory about why something that should really help people lose weight ultimately doesn't work out. And here's an item that suggests that sweetened drinks pose a greater diabetes risk than other sugary foods. And this is just going to add ammo to the very self-same members of the legal profession who nailed the tobacco industry. They're looking for that smoking gun that's going to conclusively link cola beverages and soft drinks to our obesity epidemic and diabetes. And you might believe that the lawsuits are coming and the beverage industry is circling the wagons, because after studies like this that say that sweetened drinks pose a greater risk of type 2 diabetes than most other foods containing fructose and naturally occurring sugar. That study is published by the British Medical Journal. The findings suggest that just plain fruit and other foods containing fructose seem to have no harmful effect on blood glucose levels, while sweetened drinks and some other foods that add excess nutrient-poor energy to diets may have harmful effects. So this should also provide some reassurance to some people who are fructose-phobic. They see, oh, you know, that fruit has fructose, so I'm not going to eat that fruit. Unless you have a really severe metabolic problem or you're really, really overweight and really trying to cut the carbs, the modest amounts of fructose that you get in fresh fruit are nowhere as deleterious as the high fructose corn syrup that you're going to find added to sugary beverages and desserts. That's artificially added fructose and, you know, ultimately has a more direct effect on metabolism than the small amounts of natural fructose that are included in natural foods. So they looked at glycated hemoglobin or hemoglobin A1C and fasting glucose and fasting insulin, and they found that ultimately most foods containing fructose don't really have such a harmful effect on blood glucose levels unless the foods provide too many calories. But when it comes to sweetened drinks, sodas, they tilted the balance in favor of metabolic dysfunction and blood sugar dysregulation. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 877-726-8255 is our number for Intelligent Medicine.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you know that fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, that support your cardiovascular, brain, nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. My preferred fish oil brand is Carlson. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to store. They source only the highest quality deep cold water fish using traditional sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity. I use Carlson myself, recommend it to my patients, and I've included Carlson in the Intelligent Medicine Protocol Starter Kit, available on my website, drhoffman.com. Carlson award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing pills. For more information, go to www.carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Be proactive. Sure, you take your daily vitamins, but do you replenish the glutathione levels in your body as part of your long-term health strategy? Glutathione is our body's primary antioxidant. It is unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals, exposure to environmental toxins, and the aging process. As we age, our levels decrease, making it important to continually boost our glutathione levels. Why is RegActive so groundbreaking and so important? Backed by over 20 years of published research, RegActive products contain ME3, a patented probiotic delivery system which carries glutathione past our stomach acids and into our bodies, stimulating our own body's production of glutathione. It's a paradigm-changing approach to health and anti-aging wellness. Join our family today. Our RegActive family of glutathione-producing supplements, liver and detox, cardio wellness, and immune and vitality. Be proactive. Choose RegActive. Available online and coming to fine natural products retailers nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. And now let's take a call from Forrest. Welcome.
This is Forrest in Aurora, Colorado. Recently you were mentioning that saturated fats were somehow involved with increasing the risk of Alzheimer's. I'd like to hear you be more specific on that, because I thought that overall that was saturated fats were normally good for you. Thank you.
Okay, well, this is really a hot subject of debate. And it's, you know, first of all, saturated fats are being vindicated in a variety of ways. Saturated fats in some recent studies have been shown not to be implicated in the causation of cardiovascular disease, contrary to what they've been telling you for decades and decades. You know, eliminate your saturated fats, trim the fat from meat to make sure you have a lean chicken breast if you're going to have any animal protein, avoid high-fat dairy, and on it goes. But then studies show that high-fat dairy may not be implicated in cardiovascular disease and may, in fact, have a protective effect, and that meat consumers may not have a higher risk of various diseases. And partly it's confounded when you look at people who are high meat eaters. They might also have less healthy lifestyle habits. You know, generally vegans are very careful about many aspects of lifestyle. They may practice yoga. They may exercise more. They're less likely to smoke and drink to excess. And so many of these studies, you know, correlation is not necessarily causation. People who consume a lot of bacon may be doing other less healthy things. But what about people who consume a lot of saturated fat, but as part of a healthy diet? And I would consider myself one of those individuals. I consume whole butter, and I consume ghee and coconut oil. All these are saturated fats, and I don't trim the fat from meat. And, you know, this, I think, can be part of a healthy lifestyle if you're reducing the carbs that you take in. Often people who consume a lot of meat, yeah, you know, they do studies on people who consume a lot of meat, but they also have a lot of French fries, and they have a lot of soda. And as part and parcel of that, they got problems. So when it comes to the brain, there's this genetic switch, which has to do with ApoE proteins. And ApoE comes in three variants, ApoE3, ApoE4, and ApoE2. If you got a double hit of ApoE4, it's thought that you have a much higher risk of Alzheimer's disease. And studies have suggested that those are the very folks who need to be on vegan or quasi-vegan ultra-low-fat diets. But there's not, you know, and I looked into this and I said, well, you know, I'm open to that possibility. And maybe saturated fat really is bad for those people. But there's not a lot of research that shows that saturated fat is part of a very good diet with lots of fresh vegetables and less in the way of carbs, that this may not be protective against the effects of having this genetic propensity to Alzheimer's disease. And the other part of this is that ketogenic diets, which are high in fat, because necessarily you got to get your calories from someplace, your energy source has to be fat rather than carbohydrates, and you keep your carbohydrates to less than 5% of total calories, they've been shown to be helpful for people with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And part of those programs inevitably are, you know, not just monounsaturated fats from olive oil and polyunsaturated fats, but saturated fats from such sources as coconut oil, which is actually thought to be protective on the brain. According to some small studies, coconut oil may have brain benefits, and that's a saturated fat. So what I have to conclude is that the word isn't really out on this. Most of the studies that implicate saturated fats as accelerating Alzheimer's, they don't restrict the carbohydrates. And unless you restrict the carbohydrates, you can't really study the effects of saturated fats as part of a healthy low-carbohydrate or ketogenic diet program for Alzheimer's prevention. And that's what I think where some of the studies need to be done. I just think that the word isn't yet out on whether people with that gene hit need to become vegans on an ultra-low-fat diet. I'm not sure that necessarily will be beneficial, although certainly that's a clean diet. It's rich in nutrients and fiber. But it may or may not be necessary to restrict the saturated fats. So thanks for that great question. Okay, this item. Probiotics are used for a lot of things, but the latest application of probiotics is a somewhat unusual one. Companies are working on probiotics for dandruff. Now, you don't take them orally. You receive these probiotics. Actually, in this case, oral probiotics. Oh, I'm kind of surprised. It's not a probiotic shampoo. It's oral probiotics. Probiotics have the potential to improve dandruff by altering the microbial environment of the scalp. And so, interestingly, the authors of this study were employees of Nestle, which supplied the probiotic. Three other authors were employers of Oreal, of which Nestle is part owner. And so maybe they stacked the deck in favor of the study coming out positive, but there was an average improvement of 70% in dandruff in the individuals consuming this patented probiotic formula. This isn't just an ordinary run-of-the-mill probiotic. This is a probiotic that is specifically targeted towards seborrheic dermatitis. And it makes sense because there's a gut-skin connection and the scalp is definitely part of the skin. So maybe in the future they'll be rolling out anti-dandruff probiotics. Meanwhile, take your probiotics. They may have some beneficial effect. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And thanks for listening. And remember that this program is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. You can listen to our podcast, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download our newsletter. Make sure you subscribe. Have a great holiday. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Everyone's raving about the newest botanical superstar hitting the store shelves nationwide. Hemp-derived cannabidiol, or CBD, has been receiving a lot of attention for its tremendous promise on human health. Plus, CBD oil by CV Sciences is the trusted brand setting the standards in this newly emerging category of plant-based extracts, offering a variety of hemp-derived CBD oil products that you can count on. In order to make the highest quality CBD oil products available, it is important to manage every step of the supply chain process, from seed to shelf. That's why, from harvesting our EU-certified hemp seeds, to laboratory testing for quality and safety, to producing our exceptional line of products, we are committed to going the extra mile. It is our commitment to you. Join the CBD Evolution. Ask your local natural health retailer about Plus CBD oil products by CB Sciences today. Follow us on Facebook and learn more at pluscbdoil.com.